believe it or not, the Brewers are indeed human. They lose the series over the weekend against the Braves. Let's talk about it on Locked On Brewers.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Good morning, happy Monday, and thanks for making Locked On Brewers your first listen of the day. My name is Dominic Catronio. This is your only daily podcast dedicated to your Milwaukee Brewers. And today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline has you covered this season with more props, more odds, and more lines than ever before at BetOnline, where the game starts. I am the statistician for Bally Sports Wisconsin, usually watching every single game, start first pitch to finish, giving you all the news and nuggets you need to know about the Brew Crew this year. So let's talk about the weekend. We're going to get through some mailbag questions, what went right, what went wrong, and get you on your way on this beautiful Monday before the Brewers get ready to take on the Reds later tonight to open up a three-game series with Cincinnati and the return of Luis Castillo in that series as well for Cincinnati. But quickly, let's talk about the weekend that was. Brewers won the opener on Friday with an Eric Lauer win. They win 6-3. Lauer went into the seventh inning. His 10-plus strikeout streak ended. He's now a 3-0 record, a 1.81 ERA for Lauer. The zoom ball was zooming. He looked great on Friday. Then also getting the save in that game, Josh Hader passed John Axford for the second most saves in Brewers history. That's now 107 saves in Hader's career, so congratulations to him. He's now two strikeouts away, by the way, from 500 in his career, so that could happen tonight or tomorrow as well. Then Saturday's game was a tight one, 3-2 the final. And an overarching theme in all this, defense was really odd weekend. An error, at least one error in every game for the Brewers, three errors on Saturday, two more errors yesterday on Sunday. Really odd weekend, and we can get into Andrew McCutchen's tweets about it as well in just a little bit. But the Brewers fall 3-2. They did get a run off Kenley Jansen on Saturday when he was going for the save, but a key insurance run at the bottom of the eighth turned out to be the difference. Corbin Burns had a tough luck loss. He only allowed one earned run working six innings, but he was outdueled by Max Fried. You tip your cap to Fried. Seven innings, four hits, one run. It was earned, one walk, and eight strikeouts for Fried. He was looking nasty and dominant. Brewers have had a tough time with lefties. They are now 4-7 this season against left-handed starters. Something to keep in mind moving forward the rest of the season. So the Brewers fall, go for the rubber game yesterday, and it wasn't really that close. Granted, a couple of plays that just got out of the hands of the Brewers looking at things in that second inning. Of course, the Brewers load the bases with only one out and 8 and 9 do up, and this is the difference of the game. Brewers bring up 8 and 9, right? Bases loaded, one out, at least scratch one across, right? They can't. So Kane ends up striking out, and Jace Peterson ends up flying out to center field. Luis Urias had the day off as scheduled, given he hadn't really had a day since returning from the IL, so they gave him a day, had Jace get the start at third base, so he flies out with the bases loaded. Then contrast that to the bottom of the eighth or bottom of the second inning, and the 8-9 hitters coming up in that situation. Both drew walks from Aaron Ashby, and it was not Ashby's day at all yesterday. Ashby, it was already his fourth game this year with at least four walks, and the MO after the game was simply, look, his command wasn't there. He's missing big, and he's missing up. What I mean by missing big, he's not nipping at corners. He's not just a little bit off. No, the curveball and the slider are so deep and so drastic of breaks that they're not able to get competitive swings or competitive takes on them because they are so far outside of the zone. They never look like a strike, and they end up not as a strike. Even the sinker, he's got so much movement on that sinker. It's honestly moving more than he's expecting, and also it's not being located where he expects it as well. But to his credit, he's wearing it on the chin. His teammates have his support, and he even talked about the fact that when Chris Hook came out there during that tough third inning, that notice, hey, your head's pulling off. You're pulling off your head and on your delivery. You're pulling off and you're trying to yank everything. He needs to make that adjustment. He said this. He needs to make that adjustment in real time as a big league pitcher to recognize when his mechanics are off. Granted, it was big that he got through four innings. It just didn't matter in the end because the Brewers' offense went cold in this one. Again, they fall 9-2 in yesterday's game. They end up losing the series for the first time in what feels like a month, but the Brewers actually hadn't lost a game by more than two runs since the home opening weekend against the Cardinals when they lost 10-1. Everything else has been a close game for them, and at least they weren't shut out either, so you got to find the silver linings in everything. But the second inning was so odd. So they load the bases, and the nine hole hitter walked to William Contreras, scored the first run of the game. So now you're thinking, oh man, damage control, try to get out of this. And at this point, there's still only one out. So a ground ball can end the inning. And you got the top of the order, Ronald Cunha. He hits a ball deep in the hole at short. Only play was the second. So another run comes in. But now there's two outs, so you're feeling a lot better. And this weird blooper to shallow left. Again, the defense was odd. While this isn't an error, this is a play that the Brewers are going to circle and say, Yelich probably should have got there, but he has to play so much deeper. I mean, his defensive numbers, I tweeted this, I'm shocked at how low he's a negative outs above average left fielder. His jumps are not great either. And for a guy as fast as he is, that's a ball he's got to be able to call Willie off of and say, I got it. Willie almost got a glove on that ball too. Ends up being a double. Then they throw the ball around. It leads to all three runners scoring. Olsen gets the third. He would be left stranded there, but it goes from, all right, cool, pop up, going to be out of it after a 2-0 game, but instead it becomes a 5-0 game, and it just the wheels came off after that. A home run from Adam Duvall in the third inning, and then Ashby did manage to get through the fourth inning, and then the real blow was against Jandel Gustave. Wilson Contreras hit a three-run homer that really sealed the deal on this one. Brewers fall by a final of 9-2. Yesterday, they dropped the series. However, they are 19-10. The Braves are still under 500 at 14-16. Now, standings don't really matter, but the Brewers are still in first place in the Central here in May. Some numbers that jumped out to me from this opening weekend. The Brewers went just 4-for-23 with runners in scoring position this weekend, and that's including a 2-for-14 performance in Friday's win. Okay, so they had their worst day with runners in scoring position on Friday, and they went 2-for-14. But then they held the Braves to just 4-for-21 throughout the weekend. They did their job as far as holding the Braves. It was the long ball that was catching them. I mean, Ronald Acuña Jr. re-arrived. He's doing great. He had the fall-down home run on Friday. He did the LeBron James silencer on Saturday. Look, Ronald Acuña Jr. is always a perennial MVP candidate. You can't hold him down forever. Look, he's a great player. You tip your cap. Kudos to him. But as far as the Brewers' offense, they had a couple of balls, and I tweeted this too. The Hunter Renfroe ball just does not sit well with me from yesterday's game. Hunter Renfroe hit a ball on the screws, and this one was still 4-0, and I misspoke a second ago. I said it was 5-0. It was 4-0 heading to the third inning. Hunter Renfroe hit a ball on the screws with two outs against Charlie Morton, and Charlie Morton had a good day yesterday too. But 104 miles an hour off the bat with a 26-degree launch angle. That is the definition of a barrel, okay? He crushes the ball to dead center field in a day game. Last season, that was an out. 104 miles an hour plus a 26-degree launch angle was an out only four times on 58 batted balls, okay? Wasn't a homer every time. It's not what I'm asking for. But it was a home run 78% of the time. This year, it's been 70% of the time. That's not what I'm complaining about. I'm complaining about the outs. So four outs in an entire season last year on 104 miles an hour and 26-degree launch angle. This season already, 1 month into the year, that is already the third out on a ball of 104 miles an hour and a 26-degree launch angle. I'm not saying they have to be a home run every time, but that is just glaring at you that something is wrong with the baseballs. And instead of it being a 4-3 game in the third inning, it's a fly out to end the frame. It changes the complexion of games. And I know both teams have to deal with it, this, that, and the other. The Brewers have power. We know it. We just saw it against the Cubs and against the Reds. And I can hear you screaming through your platform, oh, Dom, those teams' pitching staffs aren't great. That's not the point. The point is, when you hit a ball hard, I know baseball isn't fair all the time, but when you barrel a ball like that to dead center field, and it's an outside force, a modified baseball, specifically taking a home run away from you, that's not right. If it was a wind howling in situation like Chicago we see at Wrigley Field, I'm fine with that. But this situation, we're sick of seeing it over and over and over again. The Brewers are just not getting everything out of the barrels to dead center field that they're getting. So my little soapbox, I'm going to step off of it now. Brewers finally lose a series. There's no reason to hit the panic button. They're 19-10. It's baseball. Any team can beat any team on any given night. I mean, just for the sake of it, listen to the NL West right now. Okay, the Dodgers are 19-7. They beat the Cubs last night. San Diego is 19-10. They just had an epic walk-off Jorge Alfaro against the Marlins. Colorado is still 16-12. San Francisco is 16-12. Arizona is at 500. They're 15-14. Any team can beat anyone on any given night. The Mariners are under 500. Cleveland is stuck at 500, 14-14. Boston is 10-19. It's still so early in the season. And another thing I'm encouraged about, we're going to talk about more in the next segment, is where the Brewers stand offensively and some other advanced stuff. And we're getting into your mailbag questions here in the next segment, too. Before we do that, I want to tell you about our friends at BetOnline, today's presenting sponsor, of course. Big one tonight. We know Bucks, Celtics, Game 4. With our friends on TNT, BA's got the call on that, by the way, if you want to go ahead and tune in. But BetOnline.net has got all your sports betting stats and info available for NBA basketball playoffs. Of course, what a long shot over the weekend with Rich Strike getting the win in the Kentucky Derby. You would have learned all about these developments at BetOnline.net. They've got live betting, playoffs, esports, and more. You can head to their website today or use your phone to get there to learn all about the trends and get in on the action at BetOnline, where the game starts. A couple of quick numbers to get into here before we get into your questions, and then we'll finally preview what's to come this weekend, this week, against the Reds. So the Brewers are currently a plus 36 run differential, which is tied for the second best in the National League, only tied with the New York Mets. They're also 36, and they are 20-10, virtually identical record. The team in the lead, no surprise, it's the LA Dodgers, a plus 74 run differential, which is the best in baseball. So that's still encouraging that they're back above 500, or they're back, you know, above in the positive, I should say, for run differential. Things are going well there. And despite only hitting one home run this weekend, they are still in a tie for second in home runs in all of baseball. So here I am sitting complaining about how hard the Brewers are hitting and not getting out of it. They still are sitting at 36 home runs, tied with the Braves for the NL lead, only trailing the New York Yankees in their dumb tiny ballpark with 37 home runs. If you don't believe me, go look at the home runs they hit yesterday against the Rangers in their doubleheader. Okay? Okay. So looking at a team offense right now for the Brewers, is the offense perfect? No. By any means, no. They're hitting 232 as a club. Not great, but hey, you know, a couple weeks ago, they're hitting 202. Their on base is finally above 300, 308. But a quick reminder, nobody's really getting on base that much. I mean, the league's best on base rate as a team is 335 by the Mets. Okay, then there's a little drop off for the Dodgers at 324, along with the Rockies, who play in another easy hitting environment. The point is 308, albeit not great, it's in the lower half below league average, which is 312. The point is you're seeing improvement, and you're seeing guys with more and more ABs getting things going and finding their stride. A 710 OPS, though, thanks to their strong slugging with all the home runs, is certainly keeping them going. 710 OPS is currently in the top half of the league. In fact, their OPS is currently slotted in ninth place in all of baseball. Their slugging is fifth best in all of baseball. They have scored the second most runs in all of baseball, which brings you to the question of like, well, wait, well, what's going on with the pitching? Corbin Burns had some tough luck quality starts. The Brewers have the second most quality starts in baseball, by the way, with 13 of them, but yet they also have a tie for the most non-win quality starts, meaning they either take a loss or a no decision in a quality start from their starter. So you would like to see that change. Team ERA, they're in a tie for sixth. As far as saves, they're a perfect 11 for 11. That is the most in baseball. You look at a total of hits allowed. They're second fewest hits allowed. They're first in strikeouts. Walks are a little high. That's still inflated from the early season. They're actually fifth worst in walks so far this season. They haven't been getting a ton of ground ball double plays, but that's partially because of all the strikeouts they're getting. In home runs allowed, they actually have allowed the tied sixth fewest home runs, even though it feels like Corbin Burns has been giving up a ton of homers this season, which there is some truth to that. But they've only given up 22 home runs this season. The only teams with fewer are the Dodgers, the Giants, the White Sox, the Yankees, and the Diamondbacks. So they're off to a good start in that regard. Team ERA sits at 3.25. Again, they are 19-10, and Josh Hader has not blown a save this season. We're a month into the season, and a lot still to figure out. But let's jump into your mailbag questions here. Got a couple of them to get to. And this kind of became apparent, really started to show its head, this first one this weekend. What happens with Lorenzo Cain? They will have to replace Cain, or they aren't serious about winning the World Series. He shouldn't be starting more than once a week. Let's talk about Lorenzo. So Lorenzo's off to an ice-cold start. There's no sugarcoating that. It has been, quite frankly, at times, painful to watch Lorenzo Cain. But right now, reminder, Andrew McCutchen is on the COVID IL, and according to his tweets, he's not feeling so great. So you're going to need Cain for a little while longer here. But I want to remind folks that when the end is sour like this, as we know, this is the last year of Lorenzo Cain's contract. He has not publicly said if he would retire at the end of this year, but it's starting to look clearer and clearer that it seems like this is going to be the end for Lorenzo Cain. He's 36 years old now. Valdosta, Tennessee Community, Tallahassee Community College. He's a great story. You know, didn't really play much baseball growing up. Freak athlete, Kansas City, originally signed by Milwaukee. You know the story by now. But when you see the end go sour like this, you forget all the good he did. And lest we forget, in 2018, he hit 308 and had an 812 OPS. In 2019, juiced baseball, albeit, he hit 260, but he still stole 18 bags, and he played 148 games. 2020, he opted out. 2021, he bounced back but was injured for most of the season, and now we're seeing a 167 average, two extra base hits. He struck out 14 times. It's not great. It's not pretty to watch right now. But as you need Cain defensively, he's still bringing it. And I salute him for what he's doing defensively with the legs. He can still run. Just you don't see as much power anymore. He only hit 8 homers all of last season. Given he hit 11 and 19, 10 and 18, and 15 in 2017, his last year in KC. Lest we forget, this dude's a career 285 hitter, a 754 OPS for his career. He could, if he gets things going, he could reach 200 career stolen bases this season. He's 11 away, so I'd love to see that happen for him here in his final year. I do agree, though, Cain should not be playing the majority of starts in center field. But to be fair to him, Tyrone Taylor isn't exactly grabbing the position for him in the early going. And I hear you saying, well, he hasn't been getting a fair amount of playing time. Also a fair criticism, given Tyrone's probably a guy that you want to give plenty of playing time. Tyrone this season is hitting only 214. He's only got one homer, 5 doubles, a 660 OPS. He has struck out 15 times in his 56 at-bats. So let's see if you can get a bigger sample size from Tyrone when Kutch comes back, but you're going to lean on Cain quite a bit here these next couple of weeks. Next question came about Keston Hira. What do the Brewers see in Keston? Is there a place for him on the team? And what could they get in a trade for him? The answer as far as a trade is little to none. Not much of a defensive player these days. He could play a little bit of second base. He's not a great first baseman. A ton of swing and miss. And a ton of swing and miss. So that's certainly going to alarm teams as far as, well, can we fix him? But swing and misses isn't something you look at. So he struck out 20 times in 42 plate appearances in the big leagues before he was optioned at the start of this road trip down to AAA Nashville. So hopefully consistent at-bats will get him going down in Nashville. You're not going to get much from him trade value-wise, but it's clear. Rowdy Tellez is the everyday first baseman, and it was made official when Keston was sent down to AAA. So Keston Hira's plays on this team, depth at this point. The bat, yes, he's got 2 homers, but he doesn't have any other extra base hits aside from that. He's got 8 hits total. 2 of them are homers. Just want to see some consistency out of him, and we have not seen any consistency out of him now the last 2-plus years. So let's see if he can hit his way back to the team, but until then, he's got to be depth right now for the Brewers as a team. And finally, our last question asks about Jake Cousins and the revelation this week. What do David Stearns and company look for with the Jake Cousins news? In case you missed it, Jake Cousins is on the injured list right now. And unfortunately, there are now concerns about his UCL. He is seeking a second opinion. If you're not familiar, the UCL, the ulnar collateral ligament, is the ligament that you operate in Tommy John surgery. So it could be on the table. The Brewers will know more about the problem this week. Todd Rosiak reported it out of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that it is concerning his UCL. There was fluid originally in the elbow and inflammation, which is why they put him on the IL, and now it's revealed that there may be some UCL issues. So he's seeking a second opinion, which means there could be Tommy John. So how do you replace him? Granted, John Del Gustave had been pitching very well before giving up the 3-run homer yesterday to William Contreras, but not only do you have him, Luis Perdomo has rejoined the team, rejoined the big leagues after having Tommy John surgery in 2021. He is back now in the big league level. He was last with the Padres. He pitched over the weekend against the Braves. And also, don't forget, you still got, you know, availability to maybe have Ashby stick in the bullpen if you want to stick with a 5-man starting rotation. So you look to Ashby, but he needs to throw more strikes to hold that role. And then furthermore, you've got Ethan Small continuing to shove down in AAA right now, and maybe they want to keep him as a starter as things roll right now before you call him up to the big leagues. Can he handle an Aaron Ashby role like he had in 2021? Remains to be seen, but this year, Ethan Small, listen to these numbers. A 1.98 ERA in 6 starts, 27 innings, 37 strikeouts, a 1.13 ERA in AAA Nashville. So he's doing great stuff. The walks are a little alarming. 18 walks for Ethan, which is why I'd like to see him stay as a starter here in 2022. They're getting healthier, and remember, in 20 days, and now 19 days, they will be limited to 13 pitchers, which means they'll have to eliminate one arm of their bullpen. Will it be Perdomo? Will it be Gustave? Will it be Milner? Remains to be the question. So adding middle relief will be tough, given you kind of have a couple of candidates between Perdomo and Gustave currently auditioning for the spot right now. And maybe you have, you know, remember, you still have Justin Topa on the injured list with his elbow. He's going to have to start a rehab assignment soon. Maybe he comes back for the second half. There's another candidate you can have that the Brewers love. His stuff's nasty. Throws upper 90s, right-handed power arm. So don't forget the name Justin Topa as things move forward. We're going to take a quick breather and get to a small, brief little preview of the weekend ahead, or the week ahead against the Reds. Before we do that, I'll tell you about our friends here at Built Bar. Of course, they've got this amazing little mixed box that comes with 12 flavors of bars and puffs. Built Bars are the perfect on-the-go snack for you all summer long. Throw it in your bag. The puffs are these little protein-infused marshmallows. Built Bars are covered in 100% real chocolate, and the macros are insane. 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 net carbs, and 17 grams of protein. And look, the flavors are all over the place. For the puffs, you're talking churro, you're talking banana cream pie, you're talking white chocolate cookies and cream. There's so many different places. Double chocolate, raspberry, all their lineup. Built.com. You can see everything there. So you got a promo code for you as well. Locked15. Again, Locked15 at Built.com to get 15% off your order. Use that promo code. Check out Built Bar. That's Built, BUILT.com, with our promo code Locked15 today. So the Reds, Brewers go to Great American Ballpark for the first time this season, Monday through Wednesday series, 2 night games the next 2 days, and then a Wednesday getaway day before Thursday's off day before heading down to Miami. And Luis Castillo is returning tonight for the Reds, making his first start of the season. He was dealing with some shoulder issues throughout spring training and delayed his start to the season by about a month here now. But Castillo, don't be fooled by the numbers last year. An 8-16 record, a 3.98 ERA. His last 22 starts last year, he had a sub-3 ERA. He was a terrific pitcher. Obviously, the trade rumors were swirling around him this past year. Even last year at the trade deadline when the Reds clearly weren't going to be able to compete, Luis Castillo is still a great, great pitcher given they've traded Sonny Gray, they've traded Tucker Barnhart. We know about the teardown that's happening right now in Cincinnati, but he is currently signed. You know, this is his final year. He's got 2 more years of arbitration this year and next year, and he'll be a free agent in 2024. So for Castillo, this will be his first appearance. You imagine he'll be on a pitch count. and wonder how deep they'll let him go. 33 starts last year. He still made every start. 75 walks was a high for him. Still struck out 192 batters. He's going to be a tall ask against Brandon Woodruff, who has been off to a slow start, 3-1 record, a 5.18 ERA this season. Then on Tuesday, it'll be Freddie Peralta, also a slow start, a 5.09 ERA, going up against Hunter Green again, a 1-4 record, 8.71 ERA. Of course, the Brewers smacked him for four homers on Sunday in the finale against Cincinnati last week. On Thursday against Cincinnati last week. And then on Wednesday in the finale, it'll be Vladimir Gutierrez with his 8.86 ERA going up against Adrian Hauser. But happy for the Reds. They got their first series win of the season. They took 2 out of 3 from the Pittsburgh Pirates. They are now 5-22. Man, what a sad, sad record to say out loud for the Reds. Sorry, 5-23. I misspoke. 5-23 this season for the Reds. Still no Joey Votto. His return is TBD. Maybe by the time you're listening to this, you may have found out he has returned from the COVID IL. He did not play this weekend. Still no Jonathan India. And then he's just now getting Luis Castillo back. They are dealing with injuries. Jake Fraley is still out. They had Aristides Aquino clear waivers. He's in AAA right now. They're just not a very good team. So the Brewers will try to bounce back against the Cincinnati Reds. And then they have the off day on Thursday before they head down to Miami. No starters announced for that, which brings me to a thought of, well, you had Ashby start in Sunday and you push back Woodruff for a day. So now as you look at the schedule for the Brewers, that the fact is, you push back Woodruff a day and an off day coming up. How do they figure to fit him in? So if you want to pitch him on Sunday to finale against the Marlins, you can do that. Or do you have him pitch using the extra day of rest from Thursday's off day to have him pitch against the Braves, given they just avoided him pitching on Sunday? Are you saving him for next Monday against the Braves? That's a question that remains to be seen. Three games against the Reds, 5:40 first pitches tonight and tomorrow, then 11:35 on Wednesday. And by the way, Wednesday is a YouTube game. We'll remind you in that episode as well. So don't go to Bally Sports Wisconsin expecting to see the game. You will see it on YouTube on Wednesday. But tonight and tomorrow will be on Bally Sports before heading to Miami. And then they're back home for a brief 6 games in 7 days against the Braves and the Nationals before another 3-city road trip. That's going to do it for this quick Monday episode of Locked On Brewers. Thanks to you for listening to today's episode. Again, my name is Dominic Catronio. If you haven't already, subscribe to our YouTube page. All the video versions of these podcasts are up there as well. And subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again. Until next time, keep on swinging.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.